This is Data Citizens Dialogues, your guide to bringing trust to your data, decisions, and all things AI. For Calibra, I'm Thomas Brents. All right, welcome everyone. It's Thomas Brents, VP of Portfolio Marketing at Calibra, and we're here for a new episode of Data Citizens Dialogues. And this week, we have a special treat. I'm joined by the data citizen. That is the data citizen of the year, the award winner, Jordan Gavin from Perkins Coie. I had the privilege of sitting down with Jordan after our awards announcement just a few weeks back, and I'm thrilled to bring you our interview here. Let's listen in.
My name is Jordan Gavin, and I'm the data governance manager at Perkins Coie. I was originally a lawyer by background, and I decided to get into more of the data space over the course of my career ever since law school. And right now I work for a large law firm called Perkins Coie, and we have about 20 offices, I think, around the country, and we just opened an office in London. So we're an international firm, and we do a lot of technology work, intellectual property work, but we are a full service law firm. So we have litigation and business law and all of the different types of law that a company might need our services for. So it's been really interesting coming in from the data side into the law firm more recently in the last couple of years. And I came in as the data governance manager a couple of years ago, and I was the first data governance manager at Perkins. So building that function up from scratch. And it's been an interesting experience combining the legal knowledge and the legal background with the data knowledge.
Yeah, that's awesome. It leads to just a natural question for me. Like, why does a law firm like Perkins Coie build a data governance program in the first place? Or more generally, why is data governance important to law firms?
Law firms are businesses just like everything else, right? We have a lot of data. And people might think of typically the legal data of being documents and memos and things like that. And we certainly have that. But there, in addition to the practice side, there's a ton of data just like every other company would have in marketing and finance and in your business operations. And so that all needs to be governed so that it can be maximized. And it's a good question because, I mean, this is still a pretty new role for law firms, and having a sort of full data management team is still pretty new in law firms. So I think people are kind of just coming around to the idea that law firms need to understand their technology and they need to be able to understand and use their data, and it needs to be of good quality. And so roles like mine are starting to crop up. But yeah, I think it's just kind of the recognition that, you know, law firms are businesses too.
That's awesome. I love that word maximize. That's a good way of describing it. So. I think the most fascinating thing is just how do you go from practicing law as a career to getting into data governance? Tell me a little bit about that transition and maybe, you know, others that maybe are considering a pivot like that themselves.
My first job after law school was actually, I was a fellow at a program at my law school that focused on improving legal services delivery through things like process improvement. And we did a lot of research and would implement programs at district courts, for example. We implemented novel programs on site there. And then part of that was collecting data and, you know, metrics about, is this program successful? Is it something we should expand? Is it something we should continue? And I always loved that piece of it. So kind of throughout law school and some work experience, and with that first job that I had after law school, being a fellow really focusing on the business side of law, I was just a lot more passionate about improving the way we deliver legal services. Even my reason for going to law school in the first place was because I just felt like the law is of such societal importance, and it's kind of the way we affect any of our goals in society, whether it's in business or personally. I mean, we have to interact with the law, and I felt like I could do that kind of one client at a time, or I could try to do it systemically. After a few years, I didn't see a path really for me that I would be completely happy practicing, because I wasn't as passionate about a specific area of law as I was about the law in general and making sure that we could use it to maximize, if I can use that word again, maximize our success with it and our experience with it and how people from companies to individuals can better leverage the law. And so it's kind of a meandering answer, I guess, but that I think that fits how I kind of ended up in this role because I had never heard of data governance before even I started this role. I just knew that I was passionate about figuring out ways to improve legal services. And I knew that data was the way to do that. And I was introduced to my current boss. And, you know, after a year or so, he was like, you know, I actually have a role coming. I have a role that I'm starting. I have a new data team. And would you be interested in this data governance role? And he said, you know, I don't know what that is, but send me a description. Sounds interesting. And then I did some more research and I was like, yeah, that's it. That's what I want to do. I want to be kind of on the business side of data and, you know, not necessarily being an analyst or something super technical, but I want to be able to connect the business, connect the firm to data. And yeah, it's been good.
I love that. You put your passion to practice, to use another word that, yeah, you know, that I hear here, passion, right? And put that into motion. And you're right. I mean, there's business sort of roles in data governance as you're starting to learn, right? And then there's kind of technical roles. You mentioned analysts. So what are some of the skills that you bring that, I don't know, maybe are different from someone with a more technical background that's, you know, heard of data governance before and kind of put this into practice?
I think the main thing for me is, I mean, I want to say that having the technical expertise and having technical roles on the team is obviously super important. I mean, you have to be technology enabled, but I think you have to be business led. And I think that's where I come in, is that, you know, just kind of understanding first and foremost what the business is and the importance of the law and being able to speak to the customers, our customers, whether it's internal or whether it's our clients, about the importance of what we're doing in language that they would resonate with. I think that's probably where I can be a really good fit for a governance role in the team, because I can bridge the technical and the business and what the business really cares about. So that's what I would say. I think, you know, that's not to say that, you know, someone without a law degree, you know, couldn't do that. I think it's just, you know, whether you have the interest in really learning the business, right? And whether you can speak to a bunch of different kinds of people and sit with them and listen, ask them questions about what their priorities are and how they interact with their other colleagues, with systems, with data currently, and really get to know them kind of on a professional level and figure out what they care about, and then by extension, what the business cares about, then regardless of your background, I think you could be really good in that type of role. But I think just that combined with just being steeped in the business of law for so long, I think probably really helps.
That's awesome. Inquisitive, collaborative, Technically enabled. I love how you said that, but yet business focused at the same time. Yeah. That's really cool. I think those are good skills. And if you're listening and you're kind of feeling like you have that in you, right? And you have, again, to grab another one of your words, passion, right? You have the passion to, you know, maximize the results of data, then, you know, maybe this is it, right? Yeah. Maybe that's for you. So what makes it so interesting for you, data governance, and you know, what made you, I don't know, make the pivot into the role?
Well, like I said, I, you know, it was kind of a new concept to me when I started. And I had gone from law school to fellow to, I spent time in a knowledge management role at a former law firm that I was at, and then in an innovation role, and then in data governance. And I think a lot of it was discovering where I felt the most like I had the biggest impact, you know, where I was able to really combine my skill set and my what I was interested in, which is really, I really loved the law and I really loved data. And I, you know, I wanted to be able to combine those in some way. And I just didn't know really that data governance existed until I was, you know, introduced to my boss now, Mark Thurgood. And He didn't really know much about it either. We were really just starting off on this, you know, on this path. And so we kind of talked through it, and he, you know, was just like, I want you to come in. I want you to run it. I want you to own it. I want you to, you know, run it like a business, and you own the data governance strategy. And I thought that it sounded like a really good opportunity to, regardless of maybe what traditional data governance was, I could learn about the discipline of data governance and then still mold it to fit what I felt the business needed the most. I mean, that's what caused me to make the pivot, right? I mean, it's not, I wasn't out searching for a governance role. I was in my previous roles. I loved the part where we would work with the lawyers and work with others in the firm to build something that I felt like was really impactful and was sustainable and that actually made a difference. And I just really thought that law firms were not taking enough advantage of data and were not looking at it as the asset that it is. And so I knew I wanted to get into that area. And it just kind of organically developed where Mark and I developed this role and ran with it. Yeah, it's kind of, like I said, it's kind of meandering. But again, that's kind of how I kind of meandered into it, right? I didn't go to school for data governance. I didn't, you know. Right. And so I think hopefully that's still helpful to people listening, because I would love to get more people involved in data governance, because it really is... it's fun.
Well, whether it's trial and error, as you said, or it's you and Mark being a bit of, a trailblazer, right? You guys are figuring it out. I get a sense of where the program was at the beginning, which was, you know, kind of non-existent. Mm-hmm. You knew the data needed to be treated better. So what were some of those initial challenges that you faced? And I guess, how did that initial plan that you put in place, how did that help you overcome those challenges?
I think number one was just the newness factor to every, not just of the team, but kind of the discipline to the firm. It was a little unclear to people what we were trying to do. And I think by extension, their initial reaction was to kind of withhold some authority and, you know, withhold some of that decision-making power. So in the beginning, it really took a lot of communication. This is what our goals are. This is how we're going to operate. For example, a specific area of confusion was, well, we already have kind of information governance. Is this the same? And do we really need two of these? And so being very clear about how the two were different and that I don't want to do what you're doing. I don't want your work. I'm proposing something very specific. And then, you know, just making them feel more comfortable that I wasn't here to take over work that they were already doing. I'm here to do something that nobody's done yet here. And so it's filling a gap rather than taking over. We did plan for some communication, but I think there's always things that come up that you don't prepare for. So we just tried to be really transparent and inclusive in our conversations. And, you know, we built a data governance council and a data governance board. And I think lots of governance teams have kind of that structure where our council is a lot of directors and senior leaders throughout the business and outside of technology. And then our board is our chiefs, our CIO, our chief marketing officer, CFO, and so on. And so that kind of also helped us overcome the, I think, information divide. And it also helped with the second kind of thing that we stumbled up against at the beginning, which was in a governance role, like we have to make a lot of decisions and we have to say, like, you can't use the data that way. You can't label the data that way. And one of the questions was, well, do you have the authority to decide that? Or like, even if, you know, we were sitting in a council meeting and, you know, people would say, it's a good idea, but I don't know if we have the ability to enforce that or decide that. And so having that apparatus and, you know, one of the first things that we found that, like, man, we've got to secure some functional authority from our board and our chiefs, which is basically, you know, they're everybody's boss. So if they're handing over some, you know, authority, even if it's conditional or if it's temporary, it doesn't matter. As long as they kind of let the firm know that the policies that we decide, the standards that we implement, they're firm standards and they have to be followed. It's not optional. If you have an exception, we can talk about exceptions and make sure that we are managing those. But yeah, other than that, I mean, they're firm standards. And so, something as basic as that, like just what do you do and can you really do it? That's sort of in the beginning. Those were the big hurdles. And it might be, I mean, I don't know, maybe in a more like data mature organization, I mean, that might be far removed from people's memories. But I mean, for us, it was a very a real thing. And now, I mean, it's funny looking back on it now, because those are just two things now that we don't even have to talk about anymore. We don't even have to deal with it. It's just kind of, we just operate under those assumptions. Yeah.
Just sort of important there at the beginning, right? Yeah. So collaborative, bringing the right people together, being able to communicate about what we do, and maybe more importantly, what we don't do, right? Mm-hmm. And having that very clear and concise message seems like we're important factors. And be remiss to say the authoritative part, right? Mm-hmm. Needing to have that in your back pocket. And it sounds like you guys established that nice and early on so that you're able to kind of put that aside and just start getting to work on the business of data governance. So let's talk about that for a second. What are some of the greatest accomplishments over the past 2 years of working in data governance that you'd love to maybe hang your hat on that you and Mark and the whole team have seen through?
There's a few that I'm really proud of. I think a lot of data governance and data work is playing the long game, so it can be kind of hard to see payoff, you know, quickly. But I think that we've been maybe not lucky. I mean, we've worked really hard, but we've had some tangible wins that we can kind of point to. I think, you know, we've had some great data quality projects where we've, you know, we've been able to save the firm a lot of money and extra storage because we had a bunch of, you know, duplicate storage everywhere. We had mismatched data terminology in different systems. And so we cleaned that up and made things a lot more streamlined and reduced the need for a lot of code and, you know, all of that. But I think one of the things that I'm most proud of is our data literacy program. When I first started, and I like, you know, like we talked about, I was kind of learning data governance. And so I was doing a bunch of research. And one thing that really struck me was all of the failure. Like, there's so much, like, you know, reading Gartner articles and reading books and things like that was just how hard it was to actually break through and be successful with data governance, because it, you know, it usually falls short for one reason or another. And when I was reading through this research, one of the things that I noticed was a lack of data literacy or a lack of understanding data and knowing how data can be used and why it's important to manage our data in a certain way. That was one of the reasons that people usually listed as barriers to being able to have a successful data program. It wasn't part of my initial job description or, you know, something that we had originally planned. But, you know, after reading all this, I thought that's something that we should probably do. We should probably work on raising the level of literacy for the whole organization. We decided to just focus on the business professionals and not the lawyers, because the two were actually, I think, very distinct groups. And, you know, we wanted to, we had a strategy of starting with our data or our business professionals and kind of cleaning up the back end of the house, so to speak, and then moving on to the lawyer. So we implemented a data literacy program for our business professionals to tackle those basic issues of what is data? And do you really deal with data all the time? Yes, you do. What does data quality look like when you get a report or a dashboard and it's telling you all of these things? What can you reasonably infer from the data that you're seeing? How can you interpret charts and graphs? How can you ask good questions about it to make sure that you're making correct inferences, right? Like, if the sample size is not good, or, you know, it's not random, then it's limited in what you can reasonably infer. And so just making sure that people understand those basics of interpretation and digital and data ethics and data quality. And it's been kind of wide ranging. We've been able to keep it going for a couple of years. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of, I think, because we took a survey. We had people take a survey at the beginning before we started our data literacy content. And then we took it again at the end of last year. And I mean, we were able to show a statistically significant improvement in the amount of perceived literacy. We didn't test actual skill, but perceived literacy. And so that was really exciting. And so we're going to keep going. And we're going to test again at the end of this year. But I think it's been really successful, and we've had some good quantitative and qualitative feedback. People really seem to like it. I think it's turned out really well, and it's kind of surprising, I think, even to me, because I was just expecting it to kind of be this one-year little experiment, get people comfortable with some basic terms, and it kind of took off. So I've been really happy with it.
That's awesome. I love that. And I think your research at the beginning, I mean, it really aligns with a lot that we hear on this podcast and as well as, you know, from customers all over, right? One of the keys to success, right, is actually formulating that culture. But it's really easy to say, like, I'm going to have a data-driven culture. Well, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
So getting people working on literacy and, like, actually testing it. First off, kudos to you for setting the benchmark. It's like the step people forget, is that you have to have like baseline zero, right?
Yeah.
Like, where did everybody start from? Otherwise, I could test it a year from now, but what the hell do I go back and look at? I love that you did that. I think it's really smart. And I think it's a really good metric. I mean, we can look at metrics for governance, we can look at adoption numbers, we can look at the quality numbers, but it's metrics like that where you've actually moved the dial. You've changed people, even if it is qualitatively, like, I feel like I understand this side of my role. I understand that bit a little bit better. That's really impactful. Let's talk about those success metrics and maybe just stay on that point. You know, how do you measure success? Are there other areas? What are maybe some of the KPIs that you're tracking, you know, above and beyond the literacy one that we just talked about?
It's a tough question for me to answer, I think, because I'm not a big KPIs person. I'm not a big metrics person. I am, as long as I'm measuring something really specific and I can really, like with the data literacy survey, for example, I know exactly what I'm measuring. The questions are targeted, so it asks something specific about a data concept, and I can see I can see it for on the person level and as the broader firm, what their facility is with a particular concept. And I can see over time how it's improved. And I can take direct action from that. I think in data governance, it's hard to find a lot of those metrics where you can really directly measure success. And I think one where I have found is with data quality. I think we can measure data quality directly. So we've done that. And like when I mentioned the data quality project earlier, I could point to that and say, okay, I improved the quality of this field of data by 6 percentage points. That's something that I can directly measure. And then I can continue to test that data over and over again and see if quality is dipping. I think that other metrics, and maybe this will help with the point that I'm trying to make about it being kind of difficult, is that a lot of the other metrics are sort of indirect, and they might be indicators of something going on, but they're not direct measures of a phenomenon or how people perceive something, how good they are at something. So like with Calibra, for example, I mean, Calibra does have a good usage metrics, and we could go in and see, for example, our last data literacy module was a Calibra scavenger hunt. And so we kind of sent people through looking for different things in Calibra. And then if they got to the end and they found a form hidden somewhere, they could enter their name and win a data governance mug. And from that, we were able to use the Calibra usage statistics to see, wow, we actually had 50 new people come to Calibra in the last day. These are real numbers. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, that was really cool. But more longitudinally, when we look at usage statistics in Calibra, you know, a lot of people might be thinking, well, we only have like 20 users in there, you know, and on a regular basis. And we have a firm of 1,200 business professionals. Like, is that good or is that bad? I mean, it sounds bad, right? But to me, I don't need all the business professionals to use Calibra on a daily basis. I need people who are generating reports, who are interpreting reports, who are using data day in and day out. Those are the people that I care if they're coming to Calibra regularly throughout the week, right? So I don't really have individualized statistics for those people. So my options then are, I can say, well, I want to have a goal of, you know, 50 users every week in Calibra, but I'm always going to fall short of that. And then how do I how do I measure that? Is it someone coming in and then going back out? Does that count as a use? Is it, you know, if it's my counsel, if it's someone on my data governance counsel that, and I do care about them visiting Calibra, if all I can tell is that, you know, they came in and looked up a business term, but what I really need for them to do is to give feedback on the proposed terms and vote on whether they approve it to be put in the catalog. If they're not doing that, do I still count it as a beneficial use? You know what I mean? So it's like, and I don't know, maybe I overthink it, but I just want to be able, if I'm going to track something, because it takes time and effort to really track a metric, if I'm going to track something, I need to be able to trace it right back to some underlying reality that I want to be able to know. I want to be able to know if my firm is more data literate than it was last year.
And not just want the mug, right? not just want the mug.
They want the, well, actually, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, I could be, you know, a great mug designer because everybody wants a data governance mug.
I'll send you my address after and look for my Perkins Coie data governance mug.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you like a kind of a future looking question, right? Like, give me an idea. Where do you see data governance going in, say, the next 5 years? And how do you see AI sort of impacting that space?
So I think that data governance has to expand to include AI governance. It has to. You can't separate the two. I think it's going to look a little different and the stakeholders might be a little different. I've said this before that we've all probably heard the garbage in, garbage out metaphor. And data governance is still what is going to help you decide whether what you get out of your AI is garbage. And so we want to make sure that the data and all of the training data, everything that's used in an AI system, whether it's homegrown or whether it's a third-party tool, is using governed data. Because if it's not, then we've wasted our time. I think it has to expand to include that functionality. And, you know, the next 5 years, I think that data governance is still going to be the primary driver of governance activities in businesses. I think that we'll start to stabilize with our opinions about AI. I think you have either, you know, people who are really excited about it and over the top, like, I, you know, can't wait to do everything with it and it's going to take over the world, to people who are very skeptical that it can do what it says it can do, that it is safe to use, that it's responsible to use. And so, you know, we're going to really limit our interaction to limit our risk. I think you have, you know, those two. And eventually, you know, they'll start to come together into a more middle of the road approach. And it probably will take 5 years to get to that stabilized approach. But I think that once we kind of come down off the hype, we learn to manage some of the risks, we'll start to realize that it's just a new use case for data governance. So that's what I plan to do going forward, is just incorporate that into my existing program and make sure that we identify the use cases, making sure that when we're using training data, that it's governed, you know, from a quality and a risk perspective, making sure that we're not mishandling any data. And then also, you know, making sure that we're not accidentally like laundering data through third-party apps, right? Because every application is going to have an AI component, and we want to make sure that even if it's in a third-party app that's secure and it's, you know, it's on-prem and it's in our, that we're still not putting data through there that we shouldn't be, because we think it will obscure it somehow through, you know, aggregation or, you know, other methods that we think it'll get in there and it'll get jumbled and it'll just be part of the training set. So we need to just to make sure that we have a handle on that. But I think it's going to play a big role in the next few years.
I love that. I think it's such a unique perspective for you in particular, being both a lawyer and a data governance practitioner, right? To give on the state of AI governance as part of data governance. And I love the fact that you're looking at that as, you know, kind of an extension of you and your team's work. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. The final thing is just, again, unique perspective that I think you can give is just maybe a piece of advice, right? now that you've been at the job for a while, what advice would you give to someone who was maybe also trying to make that pivot or looking for a new spot and seeing data governance or perhaps hearing about it from a podcast like this as a unique thing that maybe I could pivot my career into?
I would say that your background probably matters very little. I think that if you're open-minded, if you're curious, if you really like to solve problems, I think that showing that you can do that is probably the most helpful thing. And again, I'm coming from the legal industry where it was pretty brand new when I joined. And so maybe some other organizations are looking for someone with tons and tons of data governance experience. But I really think that that's less important than being able to come in and really understand the culture from the inside, because data governance it's a exercise in organizational change. So to be able to be curious, be open, be able to take in a lot of different viewpoints and be a neutral arbiter for different factions within the firm that are going to have disagreements about how data should be used, I think those qualities are more important than a specific background. And I do think it takes special kind of personality. Like I always say that, you know, I love a mess. I think that's why I do an okay job with data governance, because it's like, you know, when a necklace gets like tangled, you know, the chain gets all tangled up, and I could pull apart necklaces all day. And I think that's a lot of what data governance is. And what we do in our work at Perkins is untangling all of this data, untangling the mess, understanding, you know, and maybe this is the lawyer in me, but being kind of very analytical and very methodical about how we deconstruct an issue. And yeah, so I think being curious, being empathetic to people's different views and the way they have developed their teams and the data that's developed up around their teams and processes, being just sensitive to that they may have some feelings about changing that, I think are more important than a specific experience. And so if I were, I guess, to give some advice, I think really take the time to learn about the industry that you're in and the company that you're in, the organization that you're in or want to be in if you are changing companies, because like I said in the beginning, data governance is about the business. So if you can understand the business and understand where the gaps are, combined with what you'll learn from what I was just talking about, talking to people, understanding how they work, you'll be in a better position to lead that governance function.
Love that. If you're a curious person, neutral-minded arbiter, I think is the word you choose, change agent, and somebody who likes a good old mess.
Yes.
Just wants to untwine that ball. I love that. That's really helpful. Jordan, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed spending some time with you here today and getting to unpack not only your background, but you know everything at Perkins Coie. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. Can we talk about my favorite part of this whole podcast? We went into this wanting to talk to the Data Citizen of the Year, but what we got was this inspirational story from Jordan about how to even get started as a data citizen in the first place. Such a cool story. And so much great advice for people thinking that governance might be right for them. I'll leave that advice best to come from her, but let's get after my big three takeaways, shall we? First off, no two businesses are alike. No two organizations or two agencies are alike. We sometimes forget that a law firm is also a business too. It runs on data. Think your enterprise isn't the kind of business that needs governance? Wrong. Take it from Jordan. Even at the law firm that she's at, they need trust in their data. Second up, you have to be technology-enabled, but business-led. I loved that. I'm going to say it again, actually. Technology-enabled, business-led. You don't have to be technical to be able to explain the importance of data. Governance solves business problems, period. Third, data governance has to expand to include AI governance. Jordan said this best. There's this like middle ground between those that are excited for AI and those that are skeptical. But in really like no time at all, those two groups, they're gonna merge. And who needs to be ready for that? The governance team. Now's the time. That's a powerful message from our friend Jordan Gavin at Perkins Coie. I hope each of you got as much out of that as I did. As always, for Calibra, this is Data Citizens Dialogues, and I'm Thomas Brents. Thanks for listening. Want even more insight into managing your data? Visit calibra.com/podcast for additional resources on the topics covered in our show. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Enjoy what we have to share? How about a 5-star review? At Calibra, we absolutely appreciate your support. Data Citizens Dialogues is a production of Calibra in collaboration with Stories Bureau.